See what that's about this evening at 5:30. I've been asked if I would deal with the question of discernment, the discernment problem. We're going to look at this in two lessons and continue the thought and give more answers in our study next week than we will even this morning. But let's talk a little bit about discernment. That term is used in Hebrews chapter 5 and in verse 14. We'll come to that verse in just a moment and read that verse. But let's define the word discern. We'll talk more about understanding discernment in a moment and come back to these very definitions. But if we want to talk about discernment, we need to know what we're talking about. What does it mean to discern something as per the use in Hebrews 5? A.T. Robertson says the word for discern is the word for deciding between. Where there are two things and you decide between those things, understanding there is a difference. Vine says it means to separate or to discriminate. Thayer says it means to distinguish a discerning or judging. So the idea of discernment has to do with distinguishing between things. There's more to it than that, but that's a basic concept to get us started on why we need to talk about discernment. Well, the passage that we alluded to is Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 14. This is where those brethren to whom Paul was, who I think is the author of the book, right, saying that they had not progressed as they should, but the full meat, that is the meat of the Word of God, belongs, the solid food belongs to those who are of full age. We'll come back to full age a little bit later. That is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised, here's our word, to discern both good and evil. They can distinguish between what's good and what is evil. They can distinguish things. Well, we live in a society that has a hard time discerning things. For example, in Ezra 3 and in verse 13, this is not talking about spiritual things within itself or our society, but it well illustrates. This is when they rebuilt the foundation of the temple. And there were those that were present who remembered the first temple, and they were disappointed because it didn't have the same glory. And so they were weeping aloud, and others, because of the joy of rebuilding, were shouting aloud. And the text says, so that the people could not discern, here's our word, the noise of the shout of joy from the noise of weeping. For the people shouted with a loud shout, and the sound was heard afar off. People were weeping real loud, and people were shouting for joy real loud, and it was all meshed together to the point you couldn't tell the difference between them. And if you can't tell the difference, and you don't know the difference, you're not discerning. That's the point. And we live in a society where things are meshed together, and there is no discernment. Let me give you another illustration of that. In Isaiah 5 and in verse 20, there are those who call evil good and good evil. They put darkness for light, light for darkness, bitter for sweet, and sweet for bitter. We live in a society where things that ought to be distinguished are so meshed together and confused that there is no discernment. When capital punishment, for example, is condemned and abortion is upheld as honorable and right, we have meshed things together where you can't discern good from evil in our society. And so there is a need for discernment in our society, and there's especially a need for that among God's people. So how do I determine what's right and wrong? How do I go about determining that? That's a question every one of us face on a daily basis of decisions that we're making. Do I do this or do I not do this? Do I participate in this activity or would that be wrong? Do I go with these folks and engage in activities with them, or do I not do that? That answer is found in discernment that we'll talk about. Sometimes temptation demands an immediate answer. We do not always have the occasion that we're going to sit back and say, let me think about this a few days, and let me study on this, and let me peruse through the Scriptures, and let me seek out wise counsel from others. There may be a moment of temptation. I have to make a decision right now. Am I going to do this or not? And therefore, we need discernment. There will be times when a conflict between what's wise, what's safe, and what I want to do. I know this is wise to do this, but this is what I'm wanting to do. Is it wrong for me to do that? This is what I really want to do, though. We need discernment. There's some questions that are hard to answer. We don't have a problem discerning between Is stealing wrong? Is lying wrong? Should I get drunk? Should I commit adultery? We don't have those kinds of problems distinguishing between good and evil as our society does, but there are going to be questions that are hard to answer because of many specifics and many ramifications. Now, when we talk about hard questions, there are difficult questions wherein it's hard to be consistent sometimes. And therein is a need for discernment. Sometimes we fail to draw distinctions that are necessary, that we ought to draw some distinctions that need to be drawn, but we don't do that sometimes, and that is part of our difficulty. Sometimes it's hard because we're trying to force an answer that I want. Sometimes we've already decided this is what I want to do and I'm going to force that somehow and I have a hard time meshing that with what I really know I ought to be doing. We'll talk about that more in our study next week. Sometimes it's hard to know when or maybe the occasion when my actions would be endorsing some sin and when it's not. Let me give you an illustration here. Let's take this for example. Watching pornography, we would all recognize as sinful. There wouldn't be a person present who would say, you know what, I don't see anything wrong with that. I don't see the difference in watching pornography and, say, watching the evening news. So we all know that's sinful. Well, let's go a stage further. And then what about, we all know that's wrong, but what about making or producing pornography? Could you work in the industry? I know of some printers, some men who were in the, now they were not New Testament Christians, but they were religious people who were in the printing business, and they printed large magazines like Sports Illustrated on their presses, and they had an opportunity to print some of the pornographic material, and they refused. Would that be wrong? If you own the press, if you own the print shop, and they came to you and said, we'll pay you so much to produce our material and just duplicate what we have provided. Would that be wrong to do that? Well, you say, I think that's wrong. Okay, let's go a stage further. What about if you work somewhere where they sell the pornography? You're not actually distributing it, but you happen to be where they're selling it. Could you own a store? And if they ask you to carry the porn material, could you sell that? Or what if you didn't own the store? Could you work there and sell that and be participate in the sale and the product of handing the product to them and selling that? Let's go even a stage further, which gets to more some of the difficulties of the question. Can I go to the theater, the bookstore that sells pornography? And when at what point does things become sinful? Or when is it not necessarily sinful, but is it bad judgment? Those are the kinds of things we're going to be talking about in discernment. How do I determine the difference between right and wrong? And furthermore, how do I determine the difference between that which is good and that which is bad? Well, perhaps even more importantly for our study today, how can I distinguish between what's wise and what's unwise, or what may be good and what may be better, as per Colossians 1? We'll talk about that here in just a second. So let's talk a little while about the problem of discernment. Here's the first thing we want to see. We want to see four things. Three things today, and we'll look at the fourth one in our study next week. Here's the first thing. Discernment must be understood. And so we've hinted at what discernment involves, but let's go back and talk about what discernment is. Discernment, as we gave three definitions a moment ago, and I want to go back over those three that we just gave, that discernment involves the ability to distinguish between things. Well, we're going to carry it further than that, but let's go back and get these definitions again. This is based on Hebrews chapter 5 and in verse 14. The word that's translated, discern, between good and evil, here's what these authorities say that it means. A.T. Robertson says it means for deciding between. Well, it's the same concept of when you go to buy a product and you're looking at two things and which one am I going to get? I need to decide between them. That means you need to know the distinction between the two. What's the difference in them? You might be buying a car. You might be buying a phone. I recently bought a new phone, and I was asking the young salesman that I was impressed with because he knew so much about phones, which of these two, tell me the difference between the two. He said, you would prefer this, seeing that I noticed that you're not a spring chicken, he said. You would like the one with a larger screen. Okay. Now I distinguish between the two. You see the distinction between those two. Well, it means to separate and discriminate. I want to separate these out in my mind. It means to distinguish or to discern. But let's go a step further. Let's go to Philippians chapter 1. Open your Bibles to Philippians chapter 1, if you will. You might want to make a note or marginal comment, because this is a powerful point that not that I have made, not that I made up, but Paul made it up by Actually, from the revelation of the Holy Spirit, Paul wrote it that was made up in the mind of God. That we need to learn to see clearly the difference. Not only do we need to know there is a difference, but I need to clearly see the difference in things. Discernment involves to distinguish between, but it also involves clearly seeing what that difference is. Let's look at Philippians chapter 1, beginning at verse 9. This was Paul's prayer for the Philippians. I pray that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and in all discernment, the New King James says. You may have a different translation. Well, make a note that that is translated discernment in several translations, including the New King James, which I use. That gives us the idea of what he's talking about. He's talking about discernment. Now, what's discernment going to enable him to do? That discernment that you may approve of things that are excellent. What does that mean? Well, if you have the King James, you might look at a footnote, or American Standard, look at your footnote. Let's look at this expression, that you may approve things that are excellent. Well, before you look at the footnote, how can I approve things that are excellent if I don't know the difference between that which is excellent and that which is not excellent? How can I approve of what is good if I don't know the difference between good and evil? So that means I need to discern and distinguish. But look at your footnote, if you're in the King James. It will say, in the American Standard King James footnote, distinguish things that differ. Now that fits with this concept of discernment, that you're learning to distinguish things that are different. Listen to Barnes. He said the margin here is more correct. More correctly expresses the sense of the Greek word. The idea is that he wished them to be able to distinguish between things that differed from each other. To have an intelligent apprehension of what was right and wrong and of what was good and evil. But get the point. That we need to learn to distinguish things that are different. Now let's go further on that same verse. The word to distinguish, Barnes furthermore observes, that the word that's used there for the word distinguish denotes a kind of trial to which metals are exposed to test their nature. So you look at some product and you say, well, that's made of metal. And here's something else that's made of metal too. Do you know what? All metals are not the same. There's all kinds of metals. There's brass and there's bronze and there's steel and there's copper and there's cast iron and there's aluminum. And it has to do with going through the test to determine what kind of metal this is because there's a difference in metals. Working with wood, there is a difference in wood. Quite often somebody says, I want something made of wood. What do you want to make? No, just wood. Well, you know, there's all kinds of wood. Tell me what kind of wood you want. There's a distinction in woods. And the idea of distinguishing between metals and the properties that are different is the word that's used here, learning to distinguish things that differ. What I want to suggest to you is that there is confusion that is created when lines are blurred. There are a number of things that are different. For example, there is a difference between the marriage and the bond, Romans 7, between faith and opinion, between sin and something that's merely bad judgment that's not sinful. We'll get to that in a moment. Between the individual and the church, between one who is weak and one who is unruly, as per 1 Thessalonians 5. There's a difference between something that's social and something that's spiritual. There's a difference between committing sin and continuing in it. I'm just illustrating there are things that are different. Now, what I want to suggest to you is the text says, distinguish things that differ. When you have discernment, you can distinguish those. Well, when the lines start getting blurred, you see there's a clear distinction between those two represented by this line. As those lines begin to be blurred and they're finally gone, then we have all kinds of confusion. How so? Well, if there's not a difference between committing sin and continuing in it, then here is this adulterer that is continuing in his sin. Treat him just like you do every one of the rest of us, because after all, don't we all sin? Aren't you a sinner? Are you going to claim perfection? So there's no difference. Since there's no difference, let's treat the social and the spiritual the same. So let's start bringing social things into the church. And there's no difference between socializing and spiritual. If there's no difference in the individual and the church, then whatever the individual can do, the church can do. And I'll accuse you of being sinful if I see you do something that I think that I don't agree with. So you've done wrong. Well, what did I do wrong? Well, I just don't agree with what you did. See, the problem, the blinds, when they're blurred, that creates all kinds of confusion. Now, let's go a step further. We're still trying to understand the discernment. That when there are differences in things, we need to see those differences. That's discernment. But let's go a step further. It means to distinguish between, then to clearly see the difference between. Colossians 1 and verse 9. It means to have the wisdom to choose the best of the choices. That's discernment. Now, we're in Colossians 1 this morning. We finished Colossians 1 in our Bible classes. So, most of the classes surely talked about Colossians 1 in verse 9. And you've heard me talk about Colossians 1 many times, and I don't apologize for repeating the very point to be made from Colossians 1. It's a powerful point that Paul made in Colossians 1 in verse 9. His prayer for the Colossians was that they be filled with the knowledge of His will. That's not hard to understand what he means by that. He wants people to have a knowledge of the will of God. But that's not all that he said, I'm praying for. That you be filled with the knowledge of His will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding. What is that? It's something that comes as an outgrowth from and in addition to that knowledge of the Word of God. And I again give you this quotation from Brother Weaver in his commentary on the book of Colossians that I think nailed the point better than anything I've seen of what Colossians 1 and verse 9 is about. Bear with the quotation again. Speaking of the Christian, he will do only what is in his spiritual interest, or what is good for him on a spiritual level. Some things, even right within themselves, are not best for the Christian. It does not necessarily take all wisdom and spiritual understanding to know the difference between right and wrong and the good and the bad. Stop there for a moment. It doesn't take a lot of wisdom to understand, you know what? They're asking me to lie, and I don't know whether I should lie or not lie. I think I'll tell the truth. That doesn't take any wisdom to do that. It doesn't take any wisdom. They asked me if I'd go out and get drunk with them, and I've got to decide, am I going to get drunk or stay sober? I believe I'll stay sober. That doesn't take any wisdom. Let's go further. But it does require such wisdom and understanding to know the better over the good and the best over the better, and having recognized the difference, to then make the best choice rather than just refuse the bad. You see what Paul is saying? Paul is saying, I want you to grow. I want you to mature. And I want you to grow to the point that you not only have a full knowledge of His will, but I want you to have wisdom and spiritual understanding. What are you wanting, Paul? I want you to be able to see not only the difference between right and wrong, the sinful and things that are not sinful, but I want you to see the difference between good judgment and bad judgment and better judgment and the best judgment. And make the best choices for your spirituality rather than just refuse the bad. Now, this is the concept many people have. And that is that we have two categories of things. You have things which are sinful, and if it's not sinful, then everything else is good and right. So I come along here and I decide I'm going to do something. Here is a decision or an action that I'm going to take. Maybe it's something I'm participating in. Maybe it's somewhere I'm going. Maybe it's some occupation, whatever you want to name. Here's a decision or an action. And the thought is that since it is not sinful, there's no problem at all. So one of the elders comes and talks to you, and you say, well, now Brother So-and-so, Brother George, are you telling me it's sinful? Well, no, it's not sinful. Then don't talk to me, because I haven't done anything. It's none of your business if it's not sinful. Well, a fellow Christian comes and says, you know what? I don't think what you were doing was good. Did I violate any scripture? Have I sinned? Well, no, I'm not going to say you sinned. Then leave me alone. It's none of your business. Well, that's not what the picture is, if our understanding of Colossians 1 be correct. A better picture of what Colossians 1 is about is a picture that, yes, there's categories of sinful, but there is such a thing as bad judgment and better judgment and the best judgment. And here is some action that I'm going to take, and a decision that I'm involved in, and even though it's not sinful, it may not be conducive to promoting my spirituality. It may not be good for me at all. It may not be sinful. Nobody's charging that. But it may not be wise. Isn't that what Colossians 1 is about? That discernment has to do with being able to discern not only the difference between right and wrong. It doesn't take much wisdom for that. But being able to discern between this is bad judgment and this is better judgment and this is really the best judgment under the circumstance. walking up to somebody that's in a denomination and said, you know what, if you're in that church, you're going to hell. Is there anybody here can prove that that's sinful? But I want to tell you, that's bad judgment. That's not real wise. That's not tactful. And could I not go to that person and say, you know what, you could use a little more tact when you're talking to someone, and there's a better way to approach them. What did I do that's wrong? Not a question of whether you sinned or not. Did you use the best judgment? That, my friend, is discernment. Discernment is the ability to see things for what they really are and not for what you want them to be. You stop and think about that. If I'm able to distinguish things, then discernment is I want to see things as they really are and not what I want them to be. Here's something I'm doing or I'm saying, and I don't want that to hamper my influence, but it might be. Charles Spurgeon was a denominational preacher, but I like what he said here. I think he captured the thought. He said, discernment is not knowing the difference between right and wrong. It is knowing the difference between being right and almost right. Think about that. It's the difference between being right and being almost right. It's making that distinction between things that are good and things that are bad. And here's something even better, and I think I'll choose the best over that which is better than just the poorest of judgment. Now, discernment needs to be understood. But that's not all. Discernment has to be sought. Now, what do we mean by that? Well, discernment doesn't come automatically, being able to make those distinctions. What do we mean? You don't have discernment just because you're a Christian. You've been baptized. You have become a Christian. And just because now you are a Christian, and even been a Christian for a long time, doesn't mean you have discernment. Perhaps you've had somebody come to you and say, you know what, I've been a Christian longer than you have. I've been a Christian for several more years than you have, and let me give you some wisdom. Well, maybe so. But I want to tell you, just because someone's been a Christian a long time doesn't mean they have this discernment. It doesn't mean that at all. There are young Christians who have discernment. There's some old Christians who don't have any. It doesn't come just because I happen to be older. You know, I've been around the block a few times, got a few gray hairs, I've got discernment. Not necessarily so. Sometimes wisdom comes with age. Sometimes age comes all by itself. And we're left without any wisdom. We haven't been seeking it. You don't have wisdom just because you're smart and educated. So here's someone who... One of my great heroes. Some of you saw on Facebook me mention W. Curtis Porter. One of my great heroes. Had a fourth grade education. But he knew the Bible better than any of us. And he could handle a false teacher better than anybody I've ever met or known. Just because you're uneducated doesn't mean you don't have discernment. And just because you have a master's or a doctorate, gone through college, and you say, I'm smart, got an educate doesn't mean you have discernment. Knowledge and discernment are not the same. We saw that in Colossians 1. Well, let's turn to the book of Proverbs. And let's go to Proverbs chapter 2. You remember Proverbs talks about wisdom all throughout. We cannot even single a section that talks just about wisdom. It's all throughout the book. In fact, chapter 2 is the whole point is that wisdom has to be sought. You have to go after it. You have to mine it like you're mining the metals from the earth. We have to seek it. Look at Proverbs 2, beginning at verse 1. Let's look at verses 1 to 4 and develop this thought. He said, my son, if you receive my words and treasure my commandments within you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom. Let's stop there. You're inclining your ear to wisdom. That's not letting it go in one ear and out the other. It's not like listening to your parents as they lecture you and then you say, okay, I listened and I'm glad that lecture's over and I'm gone. You're inclining your ear. You want to listen to the wisdom. I want to hear what you say. and apply your heart to understanding, yes, if you cry out for discernment, you're begging for it. You're crying for it. You're saying, I want wisdom. I want discernment. And lift up your voice for understanding, and you seek her as silver and search for her as hidden treasures. All wisdom and discernment has to be searched like you're searching for gold in the earth, and you're searching for silver in the earth, and precious metals you're searching. You go mining for that. If you were a gold miner, you don't go out into the midst of the sky and then gold is falling out of the sky. It doesn't happen that way. But you go and you dig and you dig and you get a nugget of gold, and you dig and you dig and you get a nugget of gold, and you dig and you dig and you get a nugget of gold. It takes a lot of work. And that's the point in Proverbs chapter 2. Let us go to Hebrews chapter 5, where we started. I want you to understand that in Hebrews chapter 5 says, this discernment comes with maturity. Show me the mature Christian that has grown and developed and matured as they should, and I'll show you someone who has discernment. Now, just because they've been a Christian a long time doesn't mean they have discernment because they haven't matured. Hebrews chapter 5, let's begin at verse 12. You remember Paul's warning? By this time you ought to be teachers. You have need that someone teach you again the first principles, the oracles of God, and have become such as have need of milk and not of strong meat. Quite often we're not quite as strong as we think we are, and we can't feed on the meat of the Word. We've got to feed on the simplest and the milk of the Word, because we haven't grown and we haven't matured. Verse 13, and everyone who partakes of only of the milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But solid food belongs to those who are of full age. Full age. Same word as our word perfect in Colossians 1 this morning. Verse 28, 29. Same word. Full age. Mature. Solid food belongs to those who are mature, in other words. That is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern good and evil. Who can discern between things? It's one who is mature, full age. You got to work for it. You got to seek after it. Let's go back to Philippians 1. We saw this point, but in case we missed it, let's go back to Philippians 1, and I want you to notice that it comes with growth. Remember, this is the passage where he said that you may approve things that are excellent, footnote, distinguish things that differ. You can draw those distinctions. How can you do that? Go back to verse 9. I pray that your love may abound still more and more in knowledge and in all discernment. I pray that you grow. What are you saying, Paul? I want them to grow in love. I want them to grow in knowledge. I want them to grow in discernment. And when they do, they'll know the difference in things. It comes with maturity. It comes with growth. What I want to suggest, if you are lacking in discernment, it could be you hadn't been working for it. If you're lacking in discernment, do you find that someone said the problem with poor judgment is those who use it don't know that they're using poor judgment? But do you find that you're making poor choices a lot? Do you feel you're lacking in the ability to discern? Well, it may be that we're just not working toward it. It comes with maturity. It comes with growth. You have to seek for it. Why did this person get a nugget of gold and this miner didn't? This one worked and that one didn't work for it. Thirdly, discernment must be understood. Discernment must be sought. There's not going to be any good to us if we don't value it. And discernment has to be valued. Mining for gold. If you said, you know what? What's an ounce of gold worth? It's worthless. So I'm not going to go out there and knock myself out and rent the equipment to dig and dig for an ounce of gold. And I might not get over 100 ounces in a year's time digging. So what's that going to be? If you don't know the value of it, you're not going to go for it. The same thing is true of discernment. If value is not placed upon it, we're not going to seek after it, are we? But when I begin to recognize it's a great treasure, it is of great value, then I'm going to seek after it. Now, let's consider what we are without it. When there are some things when we recognize, here's what happens when we don't have it, then we begin to understand the value of it. What value is electricity to you? You say, we pay too much for it, all right? Call and have yours cut off. and see how things go with your house. Well, maybe it is too high, but at the same time, there is some value in having it, isn't it? What's it like without wisdom and without discernment? Well, let's turn to Proverbs. Because Proverbs talks so much about wisdom, there's going to be much about the value of wisdom. Turn to the 15th division of the book of Proverbs, verse 21. Folly is joy to him who is destitute of discernment. Foolishness is a joy to the one who has no discernment. He doesn't know. So that means my behavior becomes foolish. Show me, and I'm talking about Christians now, that the world obviously doesn't have the discernment, or they wouldn't stay in the world. They'd come out of the world. But I'm talking about among Christians. We'd have to all admit that there are Christians who act foolish at times. Show me a Christian who behaves foolishly, and I'll show you one. That same person is void of discernment. That's why their behavior is foolish. So there's the value of it. We become foolish, and we may be doing things that look foolish, but we don't know it because we're lacking discernment. Let's go a step further. In the book of Jonah, chapter 4 and verse 11, this is talking about the people of Nineveh. You remember how Jonah really didn't want to go preach to them. And so God, in essence, is saying at the close of the book here in Jonah 4 and verse 11, that the people of Nineveh can't even, should I not send a prophet to talk to them, the kind of people who can't even distinguish their right hand from the left? You think about that. And that's not literally that they don't know the left, but can you imagine somebody being so confused they can't distinguish the right hand from the left? Give me your left hand. Well, which left? They don't know. And my point is that we can't distinguish the basic things if we don't have discernment. Coming down to fundamental things illustrated by the right and left hand. When you get to the point you can't distinguish your right from your left, you're getting down to the point you can't distinguish basic things. Without it, we are missing a great deal. In 1 Kings chapter 13, the young prophet couldn't distinguish between truth and error. Turn there with me just for a moment. We won't take much time in 1 Kings 13. You remember this young prophet? We called him a young prophet because he was in contrast to the older prophet. But I know he understood the truth because God had given him these three rules concerning his behavior. Verse 9, do not eat bread nor drink water nor return by the same way that you came. That's simple. It's understandable. He understood it to the point he could explain it to the king. Well, the old prophet went after him and asked him when he found him, come home with me and eat bread and drink water. And he explained it to him again. God has told me not to eat bread nor drink water nor return by the same way that you came. Verse 16. The old prophet said, I too am a prophet, and an angel of God spoke to me, saying that you're to come home with me and eat bread and drink water. Verse 18 said, but he lied to him. But that's not the point I'm interested in. Verse 19. So he went back with him and ate bread in his house, and he drank water. I'm trying to show you the value of discernment. He couldn't discern between truth and error. He knew the truth, and then when error came along, he was so clouded by it, he couldn't distinguish between the two, which one's right, which one's wrong. Well, I'm here to suggest to you, without discernment, you may say, I know the truth. This man knew it, and he could tell it to others. He told it twice, plainly, and wasn't confused. But someone came along and shifted some things around and told him, I too am a prophet. He had confidence in the prophet, and he couldn't distinguish it anymore. That happens to Christians sometimes. Someone comes along and they sing a song that's just a little off key. I don't know about just preaching and teaching, illustrating by a song. There's an uncertain sound that's issued. And we no longer can distinguish truth from error. Here's another case. Here's the rich fool, Luke chapter 12. He had a hard time distinguishing between the material and the spiritual. That ought to be clear in our minds. There's a difference between material and there's a difference between the spiritual and which one is important and which one is not. This was the young man, the rich young fool, who said in Luke chapter 12, beginning at verse 16, that I have no room to bestow my crops. I'll tear down my barns, I'll build greater ones, and store all my crops and all my goods. And I'll say to my soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. And God said, you fool, This night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be that you have provided? So is he that lays up treasure for himself is not rich toward God. He had a hard time distinguishing between the material and the spiritual. What's really important? Let's back up a couple of chapters to the 10th chapter, and here's the last thing we'll consider, and then we'll be done. Martha had a hard time distinguishing between the good and the better. Here's a case where things are not wrong within themselves. Do you remember Jesus came to the house of Mary and Martha? And Martha welcomed Jesus into her house. In verse 39, she and her sister called Mary, sat at the feet of Jesus and heard his word. She's sitting listening to Jesus teach. Martha's up trying to serve, and she was distracted with much serving. And she approached the Lord, and she said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me. And he said, Martha, Martha, you're worried and troubled about many things. But one thing is needed. Mary has chosen the good part. Well, what Martha was doing was good, serving guests. Nothing wrong with that. There's nothing inherently sinful in that. She's serving the Lord. Another guest in the house. She's doing good. But she had, that is, Martha had a hard time distinguishing between that which is good and that which would be better sitting at the feet of Jesus. She lacked discernment. Well, I said that was the last. Let me make this point. Here's what it's like with discernment. Well, I won't go back and read again, but Philippians 1, distinguishing things that differ. If I have discernment, I can easily see things that are different. I can see the difference between spiritual and material. I can see the difference between that which is good and this is better. And that which is truth and that which is error. I can know the difference between good and evil, Hebrews chapter 5 and in verse 14. And I can see what's bad judgment. And I can see what's better judgment. And then I can see, you know what, this is the best judgment. This may not be sinful over here, but this is the better judgment. I think this is what I'll do. And that's the argument of Colossians chapter 1 and in verse 9. Discernment must be understood, it must be sought, and it must be valued. Next Lord's Day morning, we're going to talk about how it needs to be applied. Now, how do I make that determination? That's all the canvas on which we're going to paint the application of that. And that would be of no value if I didn't have this background information. So with that information, now next week we're going to talk about what are the rules I go by? What questions do I raise? And how do I determine is this good judgment or bad judgment? Or is it sinful or is it not? Or should I participate or should I not? We'll talk about those questions, Lord willing, next Lord's Day morning. There may be one or more present who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, would you come while together we stand and while we sing? All things.